Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're back live. We're going to be live for a couple of months now, and before we have to leave again. This is May the 25th, year 20,000, and we have the live show.
Year 20,000?
Where did I get that?
I don't know.
But I just lost 12 years.
Well, that'd be 2,000. This is 20,000. I don't know what you did.
Well, I think we were having the show back. No, we had it back that far or not. Well, that's funny. I just dropped 12 years in there.
Well, people say you are, you know, you're ageless and you're going back in age, so maybe...
I'm going back in time also. Okay. All right. But anyway... we are live tonight.
Whenever it is.
Whatever year it is. We think it's 2012, anyhow, because everything is mixed up with the time right now anyway. They say time doesn't exist, anyhow.
I think you just proved it.
Okay. Well, anyway, what we are going to do, we started it last week. We're featuring on the show our new authors, and especially the ones that are going to be the speakers at our upcoming a transformation conference. That's going to be in July. Give them the dates.
That's July 13th to the 15th in Rogers, Arkansas. That's a Friday through a Sunday, full days. And you can get all the information about it on the website at ozarkmt.com. That's ozarkmt.com. And we have a special conference page. Just be sure to look up the Rogers one. We have two conferences going on this year, one in Rogers, Arkansas, and then one in London. So, and they're both on there. So.
We don't want to get them mixed up.
No, don't go to the wrong one. I mean,
okay. But the one in Rogers, this is our seventh one that we're putting on. And when we started it 7 years ago, it was mostly to feature the new authors, because mm-hmm. to give them a chance to speak before public, because a lot of them had never done any public speaking before. And so that was the intention, but we also have other keynote speakers, too. So we are featuring the upcoming authors and the upcoming speakers. Every year we use our new one. So tonight we have another one of our new authors, and she's also going to be speaking at the conference. Her name is Victoria Pendragon. But before we bring her on, I want to give out the toll-free number if anybody wants to call in. The number is 1-888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And we have found that that number is good all over the world, I think, because this show does reach into the four corners of the earth. We've found that out.
Yes, it does.
Because we're traveling in these countries, they all say, oh, we listen to this every Friday night. So it's amazing. The wonders of electronics. But Victoria is on the line with us. Victoria, are you there?
I am, Dolores.
I didn't want you to leave. Okay. where are you speaking from?
West Virginia, United States of America.
Virginia, okay. So you're an hour ahead of us here.
Yes, it's 8 o'clock here.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Some people that listen, though, it's the middle of night in these other countries.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Victoria has written a new book, and it's just now coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be in the bookstores in a few months anyway.
Well, it just depends on how long. I mean, it
just came off the press.
Last month or so. And then, but yeah, it takes a little bit to get into the bookstore. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I would say in the next few months, definitely it'll be there. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a process here involved. Mm-hmm. But the book is called Sleep Magic, and she's going to be talking about that tonight. And if we have any callers, we would appreciate it if you just wait to the half hour to call in, because we want to talk to Victoria, find out about her and the book first before you call in. All right, Victoria, first I always like to find out about you, about the author. Tell everybody about yourself and how this book came about, because I know you have some very strange things that happened to you in your life. So let's fill people in about your life.
Okay. I'll try and do that in a nutshell. It's complicated. I have written, actually a book about my life called My 3 Years as a Tree, and I don't even know how to say it. In a nutshell, as a child, as a gift, the result of sexual abuse, I went into the earth and up into the trees. And so from about the age of 5 on, I had a very different outlook on the world than most people, and felt that I was educated by the trees very much, and grew to understand my own truth as being very important to me, because around me I was surrounded with lies about everything and told to lie about things. So I started off with this, but it left me with many, many gifts, and primarily this gift of being very, very aware of what was going on inside of me. Like many people who experience severe abuse, I, repressed that and put it deep, deep, deep inside me, lived a very troubled youth and teenage years, and well into my 20s and 30s, I was still behaving very badly, acting out a lot. And by the time I reached my 40s, I had entered a second marriage, trying to make that work. I had lost my children when I was divorced the first time. I was feeling kind of a shambles, and then I got a disease called progressive systemic sclerosis, which is also known as scleroderma. There is no cure for scleroderma. It is fatal, and the doctors gave me 6 months to live because mine was advancing so rapidly. As a result of whatever it is, again, there's always been something inside me that has kept me up, has pushed me on. 4 years before I got the disease, I became obsessed almost with the mind-body connection and began absorbing, reading anything I could get my hands on. I created a file. I was collecting all the stuff on healing and all the time asking myself why. I wasn't sick. Nothing was wrong. In fact, I had been quite a healthy person until that time. So when the disease struck and I was given effectively a death sentence, I first got angry, because I felt that I had led a life, I mean, it wasn't a happy life, it wasn't a life where you could say that I had been a very good person, but I had done the best I could do. I had been really hard trying just to be alive. So I was angry, and that took a few months to subside. Every morning, all my life, I'd always gotten up with the sun and thanked God for another day, no matter what was going on in it. So when I was struck with this disease, I was devastated and mad. And what happened when I got out of the anger phase was that I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. You just spent 4 years reading everything you could get your hands on about this mind-body connection. There's a reason this happened. And with that, my focus changed very much. And I began to take an active part in what was going on. I began reaching out for things. I began looking at my diet. I began anything I could do, I began to do, including opening up to some people that were showing up like magic with suggestions, ideas, try this, try that, just gifts from the universe. And one of those gifts was a woman therapist, gestalt therapist, who asked the question that probably turned everything around inside me at a level of which I was not aware at the time. I thought she was a shiatsu therapist. Well, she was a shiatsu therapist. One of my dearest, oldest friends had said, "You must go to this woman. She's magical." And I went off, and she was, I thought, interviewing me for my shiatsu therapy. And it was going on and on. It was like 45 minutes and an hour. And I thought, well, this is the strangest thing. I've never had such an interview, you know, for a massage. And I hadn't read the thing on the wall that said she was a Gestalt therapist. But she finally asked me about my relationship with my father. And I said that he had hurt me, which was as much as I knew at the time, consciously. And I said that I would rather die than be hurt that way again. And so I had refused to fall in love with anyone because I had been in love with my father. And she said, did you hear what you just said?
Yeah, be careful what you say.
Well, you know, unconsciously we often say things just off the top of our heads. And I had said the thing. And that was a revelation. And we worked together for some months, trading back and forth, because, oh, I forgot to mention, right around the time I got diagnosed, I also went bankrupt. So I was trading her my art, because I'm an artist and a writer, and I was trading her work for what she was doing. And ultimately, she came across a spot one day when she was working, and she said, oh, I only ever encounter this in people who've experienced sexual abuse. And I said, well, I would know if that had happened to me. And about 2 days later, I called her on the phone, and I said, you know, I think I've gone as far as I can go with you. I think we're done. And she said,
she was hitting that spot.
And
you're coming.
But she had hooked me up with some other people, some Native American people. So I had been going to sweat lodges and things like that, and I met other people that opened my eyes to the fact that I had been doing shamanic journeying my whole life without understanding that I'd been doing it. I had power animals, and I didn't really know they were power animals, that sort of thing. And at about that time, I had decided that this is so, I don't know how to say this. It's not really arrogant, but it's so simple-minded. I had developed, I thought, something radically new and different, which was that in order to avoid feeling the intense pain, the pain of this disease was really unbearable. I couldn't even imagine. Even now, I can't possibly remember what it was like. But at the time, I had two children, natural childbirth. I'd never experienced pain like this. As your body turns into scar tissue, and it was, you know, bending up and crippling, the pain was horrifying. In order to overcome that, I invented mindfulness. At least that was as much as I knew. And I found out later, of course, that the Buddhists had come up with this centuries before. But to me, that was
brand
new.
Nothing new, is it?
Well, I thought I would share my gift with a group that was just my luck opening up right in the next town to mine for people who were in chronic pain. And I thought, well, I'm in chronic pain, and I do this thing now, and it helps me, and maybe I can help other people by introducing them to this thing that I do. And so I went off to the chronic pain group, and as it turned out, one of the people on the board of the chronic pain group was one of the doctors at the hospital where the meetings were held. And he came up to me after the meeting and after my introducing myself and saying, you know, this is why I'm here sort of thing. And he said, I have a patient with scleroderma, and scleroderma is the short name for progressive systemic sclerosis. And he said he is involved in a program at this hospital in Philadelphia, and he said people die so much that there are always openings in the program, and maybe you would like to go. I will write you a recommendation. So he wrote me a recommendation, and I went to the program, and as it turned out, they had no room at the time. But as the previous doctor had said, people die. And so I eventually got in a few months later. And they gave me this odd treatment called extracorporeal photophoresis. And it didn't work on most everybody. people were dying, and it worked on me. And within 1 month's time, right where they had put the needles into my arms to do this treatment, it's a very strange treatment, I can describe it later if you like, but right where they put the needles in, my skin was so hard, like leather. It took them 4 hours to get the needles in. But within 2 weeks after the first treatment, the skin, just where they were going to put the needles in, only there, was normal.
Uh-huh.
So I decided to stay, because I had considered not staying. I was already in enough pain that I didn't need to have somebody spend 4 hours putting needles in my arms. So mm-hmm. I decided to stay, and within a year, I was declared free of the disease. All this while, all through this horror, this becoming deformed, which I was, and crippled, and in massive amount of pain, I was having these experiences at night when I could sleep. I couldn't sleep much. The pain kept me awake, and I refused to take drugs to kill the pain because I didn't want to become addicted. So in the little sleep that I got, I had these uplifting dreams, just amazing dreams, fabulous dreams. And it was so at odds with what was going on, I couldn't piece it together. It wasn't like the dreams were, for the most part, the dreams didn't seem to be telling me anything. They weren't revelatory in any way. They were just uplifting. And so something inside me kept saying, this is going to be okay. This is going to be, I know this looks bad. You know, and every time I would go to the doctors before the treatments, it would get a little worse. And I was as bad as you can get from the disease, was just short of being dead. And I just, something inside me just kept saying, this is going to work out. So when it did work out, ultimately, my life had entirely changed. I was a different person by the end of this process. And I got into, because so many of the healers that I had worked with, I worked with all different kinds of alternative healers, and so many of them said, you have a gift, you have a gift, you have a gift. Well, I got better. I didn't want to hear about a gift. I didn't want to hear about helping anybody. I was just so happy to be alive. I just wanted to have some fun. So I thought I'd have some fun. But as luck would have it, a being appeared to me in my room one day while I was doing yoga and said, now you must go help other people. I did, you know, what you do when that happens. I shut my eyes, and then I opened my eyes, and it was still there. And when I was feeling like, okay, I guess it's not going to go away, I just, you know, nodded my head, and then I went downstairs and I said to my husband, who'd been very supportive through all this, I said, an embodiment of the light, which is what the being called itself, has just appeared to me and told me I need to help other people. And he said, well, then that's what you need to do.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know if I could just hang up a sign on my house and say, you know, come here, I'll help you. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, and she said, I help people come inside.
Yeah, exactly. Good energy at my house. I ultimately thought, well, you know what I'll do? I'll do what some of these other people I'd worked with did. I went out, I learned how to do Reiki and things like that. And nagging at me the whole time, I did. I went up, I became a Reiki master. I had another angelic experience that brought energy into that. It was one sort of supernatural, amazing thing after another here for a couple of years. And I became very frustrated, though, when people came to me for healing, because I wanted them to be able to have the same kind of miracles happen that I had had happen. And I knew that when they came to me, they were getting good stuff, but I also knew that most of them, not all of them, but most of them were coming to me to feel better and not embracing their own healing in the way that I had embraced mine, which is to say, I'm going to take an active part in this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And so I thought, I need to figure out.
Yeah, because a lot of people want everybody to fix them, and they're not realizing they can do it themselves.
Yes. Yes, and that, in fact, to a certain degree, I think, and I never say I know anything, but I posit that everyone gets well to the degree that they're willing to take responsibility to get well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was very frustrated because I thought these wonderful things were happening for me inside me while I was sick and dying, and I got well. How can I make that happen? How can I get people to see? And I was just so stuck. I couldn't figure out how I could open people's eyes to this. Well, one day I had a client, and she was there, and her name was Victoria. And her past history was about as traumatic as mine had been. And I thought, okay, here I am, energetically, working on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And when she left, because she was one of these people who didn't seem to be able to embrace it herself. She just kept coming to me and coming to me and feeling better when she left, but then she would feel bad again within, days. I threw my hands up to the universe, and I said, God, please send me someone who can teach me what I need to learn. Well, you know what happened.
Uh-huh. they answer.
Yeah. Within 2 weeks, I was invited to a presentation that a friend of mine was giving at her house. And I sat at the presentation. I sat next to a man whose energy was remarkable. I could not feel a thing coming off this man. Not a thing. I sense energy really strongly, always have. It's one of the gifts that I got as a child. I can tell from people when they're near. Nothing. It was like a zero. And I thought, what a strange man. And I never really got to meet him. He was very quiet. He kind of pulled away from the group. He let the people that were presenting have the stage, And he left when it was over. 2 weeks later, a man that I knew in the healing field called me up and he said, I'm going to a presentation tonight with this man. You may have met him. He was at the last presentation that we went to. And I said, well, I don't know. I don't recognize his name. I went. It was the guy. It was the zero man. And he was doing the presentation. His name was Louis Caracciola. And he owned a vineyard. And he was he had learned neurolinguistic stuff and neurolinguistic programming, I guess you call it, and he had hung out with some. Is that it?
Yes, that's.
He had hung out with some very interesting people in his life. Very interesting people, like Terence McKenna and folks who were kind of on the cutting edge of a lot of mind-altering research. And I sat down to listen to this man talk, and he began to say, "Here's a little thing you might try," he said. And he laid out this little formula, and he said, you take this, and you go to sleep tonight, and you take these words to bed with you, and ask for your body to tell you something while you're sleeping. And I thought, okay. And I sometimes go a little too far with things. But I went, and I talked to my body, and I said, listen, body, tonight while we're asleep, why don't you let go of whatever you need to let go of to make my fingers open up again? Because my hands were crippled. They still are, but they're not as badly crippled as they were then. They were still, the rest of my body had been perfectly fine, but my hands were still crippled. Well, again, I ought to learn sometime to stop asking for things. I
know that's how we get what we ask for. Just be careful what you're asking for.
When I got up the next day, everything seemed normal, formal. My hands were, still crippled like they were, but I thought, well, it'll probably take a while to open. I was not concerned. Within, 6-7 hours, I started breaking out in my arms, only on my arms, in boils. And
oh, my goodness.
And I still have the scars from a couple of them. And By the next day, I was in the exact same kind of pain I had been in when I had the scleroderma. And I was like,
well, you know what the body was doing, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, it was getting rid of all junk.
Exactly. Well, it was getting rid of whatever it could get rid of.
Yeah, because she said it was bringing it to the surface to get rid of it.
Yep. Yep.
Uh-huh.
And by the next day, the arm had grown an inch, had lengthened an inch, because it was still tight from the disease. Well, it had loosened up. And I thought, by George, I think that man's on to something. So I went back to him and became effectively his student and sort of like a teaching assistant with him for the next two or three years. And I told him what I had done with the words he had given me. I said, I did this. And he said, well, you know, this is not really my thing. He says, that's just a little technique that I give to people to play with. And I said, it triggered something inside me. I said, I think that when I was sick, I was doing this unconsciously the whole time. And And he said, you may well have been, because, of course, I did something nobody else did in that program before. They ran for 3 years or 4 years. I was the only one that did that. So I said to him, can we teach this? Because he was busy teaching something like the neurolinguistic programming, and he used a hypnosis kind of thing for his clients. And I said, this is a potent little piece of information you've given me here. He said, you run with it. You do whatever you need to do with it. And so I did run with it. And he was very funny. He said to the people that were in the group I was with at the time, he said, you wait and see. She's going to do something with this. And what I did was I began experimenting again on myself, because I don't mind that. And
why not, Why not? You're a willing subject.
Yeah, exactly. And who better? Because who else am I going to work this out on? I might goof up again like I did the first time. What I learned was that I had to be gentle with the body, that bodies like to change more slowly. You can change your mind pretty quickly. You can't change your body really quickly. And I learned all kinds of things and began to utilize all the studying I had done since the disease, because I had gone and gotten a Doctor of Divinity degree. I had become an ordained minister. I had studied spiritual counseling. I began integrating all those kinds of disciplines into the technique in order to have it go really deep, really deep. And I began asking my active clients, how would you like to try this? How would you like to try that? And I ended up with quite a lot of guinea pigs after myself, and the results were becoming fabulous. I had people, one woman, she said to me, I've been through 20 years of therapy. She said, I got farther in 1 year with the sleep magic than I did in 20 years of therapy. And I got comments like that over and over again. And in my own life,
Victoria, would you explain what sleep magic is? How it works. You've been talking some about it, but let's explain the technique that you've developed and wrote about in the book.
Okay. It is a technique by which you address the body lovingly. And you can actually do this. I call it sleep magic because it happens while you're asleep. But You can do it anytime during the day because your body remembers everything. That's the reason people have trouble in life, because their bodies remember everything. Their bodies remember everything. Their minds don't, but their bodies do. So what the technique does, and what I teach people to do, is I teach them to use their own life experiences on a day-to-day basis to provide the information that they will use to create what I call assignments in the book for their body. And they only do one assignment a day because the body gets harassed enough in its lifetime without us harassing it more, I figure. And the assignments effectively create a space for the body, first of gratitude. I have people be really grateful to their bodies for everything and anything. And then to consciously allow the body to relax, it begins, of course, by first things you do when you start working with your body is you say, hey, body, we're going to have a new relationship now. We're going to work together in a way we've never worked together before.
Okay.
And the whole thing, the grounds for this is love. It's love of your body. This body that most people don't respect nearly enough for what it does. It is an amazing, amazing thing. And so the technique is dependent upon that love. The technique is dependent upon the caring that you put into your little assignments. And then when you have determined what it is that you're going to work on from the day, let's say, and you might not think much of this, but it means something. Let's say you went to the store and you were trying to get help with something. You needed to find something and you couldn't find it. And people were ignoring you. Nobody was helping you. And this is an important thing you wanted. Maybe it was some kind of medication or something. Or you had some really amazing event you had to go to and you wanted the perfect outfit. Something important. And nobody was helping you. So you might base your assignment that night on what had happened to you in the store. Because you didn't feel good when that happened, probably. You felt ignored. You may have felt as though someone was judging you. There are any number of feelings you could have, and feelings are the key to this technique because feelings are the language of the body. So you're going to talk to the body in its own language with these feelings, and you might say to the body, you know, I know how we felt. We felt just terribly judged at the store today because no one was helping us. And I know that you, my body, you know why that is. Now, the reason you say that is because, as children, we are programmed. We are programmed unconsciously. We are programmed subconsciously. Because until we are really older than 7 years old, we have no capacity, no mental capacity to filter things out. It's just not right there.
Uh-huh.
So we take in at an unconscious level. I'm sorry?
I said it's like a sponge. It absorbs.
Exactly. Exactly. And we absorb things we have no idea about. We absorb when we're in utero.
Absolutely.
We have no idea of all that stuff. The body, on the other hand, has every idea. It knows everything. And it's all these things that we've absorbed that lie behind the things that we're dissatisfied with in our life, the things that hurt us, the situations we step into that we wish we could step out of. The body has all that information. And the body, if you treat it well and you treat it gently and you give it permission to, will let go of it. And what I discovered along the way in my guinea pig days with it myself was that you also have to give it something that it can fill up the empty space with. You can't just keep letting go and letting go and letting go.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it's like a balloon going out of air.
Mm-hmm.
You need to fill up. And so in the book, I actually provide lists of, you know, here are the bad feelings. Here are the good feelings, so you can see what you can let go of, and then you can see what you can fill up with.
Okay, yeah,
every
that's
feeling,
a good idea.
It works like a charm. And it's
magic?
Like magic, sleep magic. She said like magic.
And you know, it feels like magic too, because it's not hard work. It takes maybe a minute or two a day. Now, it does unfold over time, because I would say that I reap benefits of doing it on myself daily. In about 3 years, it had completely changed my life. Completely changed my life. And I was dedicated. But now you have to remember, too, that I had a background of abuse that was not like most people's. I mean, as a child, I probably, I can't even count. The number of times I was abused is countless, and by the numbers of people that I was abused by. My grandfather had sold both my sister and I for sex, and we were used multiple times in a night. And then my father later incested me. So there was a lot of abuse. I was under my grandfather's wing from about age 5 to maybe 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. And with my father from about 7 till 18. So it was a lot. So it took me a lot. And I still will have things bubble up sometimes. But I have a life at this point that is blessed. It is remarkable. It's amazing. You know, people, I realized in the kind of clarity that I have now and in the kind of beauty that I generally live with, that life doesn't have to be filled with unpleasantness. With rude people at cash registers, or you know, people bumping into your car and yelling at you. Those things they don't have to happen.
No.
They just don't have to happen. And the most amazing
But Victoria, you can see why you repressed all of those memories and buried them. That's a way of surviving. That's
exactly.
The way a child survives. They have to bury it and forget about it.
Yes.
And that's why it comes back later to haunt you, but sometimes people don't even remember what has happened.
Exactly.
But
and
you have to bury a past like that in order to survive, in order to live.
Yes, absolutely. And I know, because I recommend in the beginning of the book that people who have an abusive background also have a therapist if they're going to do this work, because they may want to run things past somebody. They may need support. I had memories return after I started this work. Mm-hmm. That the work, actually doing the sleep magic, had prepared me for having the memories come back. So I did not need to consult with anybody. I was ready. My body had only let go of what it needed to let go of to get me to the point where it was okay for those memories to come back. And when they came back, they were horrible. But I was ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it prepared me for that. For your average person, this simply makes a good life much better.
But see, Victoria, that's what I do in my work. I have to counsel clients, and we go over their past and their childhood, and they're in a safe environment, so they feel they can talk to me and talk a lot about what happened to them, because it's not going to go any further than my office. So I deal with this kind of stuff regularly, and I've seen how it can make people sick, because sometimes they do bury it because it was too painful at the time, and then now we find out that was what the whole cause of the whole thing is. So I deal with this on a regular basis, and it isn't pleasant to uncover those things. But the main thing is they can deal with it, and then they do get well then.
Yes. Yes, I guess ultimately it simply has to come up and out some way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or find another way. It makes you sick, and you don't want it to come out in that way.
Well, and learn from it. I mean, it's there for a reason, and, like, you know, learn from it, love it, embrace it for what it's there to teach you, and then that's part of it coming through.
Because, you know, it also, in my work, I try to teach people to forgive, and it's very difficult because when they look at what happened, they said, how can I forgive that person? But as long as you're holding on to that, it's still there, so you have to let go and forgive. And it is, it's not easy. None of this is easy.
It isn't easy, and the forgiveness piece is huge. It's huge. I know that for me, when things started coming up again, what I realized was that all I could do was to say, okay, I'm open to forgiving. And one day, I mean, it was sort of magical, really. One day, it just happened. It was like, oh, I get it. And I had forgiven my grandfather in an instant. It didn't happen the day I said I was open to forgiving. It was probably 6 months later. Mm-hmm. But again, I just allowed it. I allowed a space for it. I guess that's a way to put it.
Allow.
You have to allow.
Because it's never easy to do this because we have these memories, but the memories are what keep you sick. They keep you in that. And you have to release it and let it go. As I saw, I deal with people who have made themselves sick this way, all kinds of illnesses, by burying these memories.
Yes, I have my sister just down from me is schizophrenic. And we have talked together about some of these things. And
so did she have experiences growing up?
She's the one that was with me with my grandfather. My sister and I, my sister and I. She's the other one.
So there's another way that you can deal with it.
Did she have the memories, or were they buried also?
No, she has buried them very, 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 very deep. And she had only... When mine came up, I contacted her, and I said, you know, you need to know this, because I had contacted actually all my siblings. And I said, you need to know about this. And she said, I thought so. She said, I thought something happened. And she still couldn't, you know, remember it, but she had an inkling. She just felt it.
But, you know, that's a form of survival, to bury it. Otherwise, you couldn't continue on. So that's how she was surviving, by just burying it very, very deep.
Yes.
But
she has survived.
But it does have to come out sooner or later. It'll come out one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or, of course, if it doesn't come out, you die with it. I mean, she will probably pass from this life carrying that, is my guess.
That's not good at all.
Well, but that is the other end, is you work with it and let it out, or it will kill you.
Yeah.
You know, that's the extreme of it will kill you. So,
Now, that said, she has, for a schizophrenic, she has lived a rather long time. I come to understand over the years, my parents were doctors, that schizophrenics have shortened lifespans. They don't generally live as long as other people. And she is 64 now, and shows no signs of being in any bad health at all. So it's very interesting.
Can you see what was happening? You were dealing with it. It turned into this disease for you. With her, it turned into schizophrenia. So it was there. It was just the symptoms were different. It was displaying itself in a different way.
Exactly.
She was escaping in a different way.
Well, it probably had to do with how each one of you were dealing with it at the time. And that's how
that is what I feel also, because I left my body. I left my body.
Well,
she did not.
To the trees, kept going to all these things, so your body became a tree, you know?
Exactly.
And then who knows where she was going, you know, to deal with it. So, yeah.
I think that
is
not
the most survival, to go out of the body. And then the body is experiencing it as a separate entity, but the mind, the person, doesn't have to be involved. So it is a form of escape. Mm-hmm. So naturally they don't remember.
Right. And I often think that that's a reason that a lot of people don't remember, is because there's a disconnect there almost, I think, between the body, which does remember, and the consciousness, which left.
Absolutely. Yeah, they left. The other part left.
But you can see it as a form of survival. It's the only way it would work.
Yes, absolutely, and for sure.
But then when you connect again, the body's going, hey.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Wait a minute, we got to talk.
Exactly.
It is a language. You know, the body's trying to tell you things with the language. It's the only way it knows how. And most people don't even understand what it's trying to say, what it's trying to tell you.
Yes. And I do talk in Sleep Magic, I talk about that, about the language of feelings, because it is such a different thing than the language of the mind. Once we try to figure a feeling out, we've lost the feeling.
Right.
You analyze it to death, you mean.
Exactly. Yep, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of what I keep reiterating over and over again in the book is, how do you feel? How do you feel when you wake up in the morning after you've taken an assignment in? How do you feel? Because that's key, how you feel. And it's
right.
Very difficult for a lot of people to get out of their heads and into their feelings.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And I've been told that that's our indicators for everything. Is that's why we have to go to that part. It's like you said, get out of the head. And that's part of our movement now, is to do everything by an emotional gauge. So like you said, how do you feel about that? That's going to tell you which direction you want to move now. So.
Yes. Yes, that's very, very,
anyway,
very true.
Your technique is to put the person more in touch with their inner feelings and how it relates to their body?
Well, how it relates to their life.
Their life.
To their life, yeah. And to be aware that, for instance, when something happens, you can have a variety of feelings from it. Like I said, when you go to the store and you're ignored by the person in the store, you can feel many different ways as a result of that. Anger could even be one.
Yeah.
So when we realize we're very complex beings at a feeling level.
Absolutely.
And we think just because we have ever how many words we have for feelings that we can identify them. Sometimes we can't even identify them.
Right.
Because they're so intertwined.
I was noticing in the book, too, well, we just came back a week or so ago from a seminar that I put on in L.A., about creating your reality. And we talked about affirmations, but in your book you say you can have an affirmation like, you know, I will become a millionaire by selling certain products. But you said if you don't deal with these other things, the affirmation is not going to work, because it goes back to where you were treated as a child and as you were growing up. Do you want to explain that? Because people say they just keep repeating the affirmation. That's supposed to create what they want, which is a good idea. But you said there's other things that hold them back, didn't you?
And it's all the things that they don't know. It's all the internal programming from childhood. That specific concept of, let's say somebody says, I'm going to make $1 million. They usually have a setup for affirmations. And it's always in the affirmative, and it's always a statement of action. So I am going to make $1 million this year selling computers or something like that. And the issue with that is a mental statement. And your body, your feelings, your body, has to support that information. If it doesn't, you create a conflict instead. Let's say that when you were a child, maybe 1 to 4 years old, your parents were having tremendous financial difficulties, and all you heard around you all the time was how impossible it is for anybody to get ahead in the world, how a regular person just can't make enough money to live. You may have heard countless things that are all in your programming. They got in there on a daily basis or a weekly basis and are part of you. And
it's definitely
here you are
programming.
Saying, yes.
And Julia said it may be resentment about people who do have money.
Yeah.
So
oh, yes.
That you don't even realize is there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and of course you know if you resent something, you're never going to get it.
Absolutely. You're going to resist it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm.
That was one of the many things I dealt with in earlier was that I despised people with money because I knew what had happened to me as a child, and I knew that that was people with money who had done that. They had.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I thought money was evil because people did evil things with it.
Yeah, you set up a judgment very early on that way.
Exactly. And that had to be overcome before I could get anywhere, really. I was bound to encounter nothing but but nothing until
nothing
I got past that.
And heartbreak and, mm-hmm. and crumbling of all your plans and everything.
But now it's time now because now everything is turned around and you're on the upswing, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
but,
it's been beautiful.
But look how much
for...
you can help people. Because of that whole experience. I mean, because you went through the trenches. You were in the deepest trenches. And so you can relate to anybody.
Well, I think, you know. I think that most people who help people have learned that in some way by overcoming something.
Something, that's right.
I think the very best teachers have...
That way you can see there was a lesson in what you were experiencing. It's not a good lesson. But it was a lesson that you could use in your life as you got older to help people.
It was a gift. These are gifts.
Yeah, they are.
They're wrapped funny sometimes, but...
I think of it in an easier way.
I think of it in retrospect as an initiation.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Initiations are rarely
better.
Pleasant.
Yeah.
That's a better word?
That's a better feeling than I'm being tested or I'm being... That's good.
Punished.
Initiated. Yeah, you definitely don't want punished. We a lot of times we go to punished, but it's not punishment. We feel that way. But initiation. I mean, I always knew when things were... They always said, whatever doesn't... You know, what does... One of the sayings, it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. Or,
yes.
And sometimes if you're only... You're not being... What was one of the things? You're being prepared.
Yes.
And I used to think, what on earth am I being prepared for? You know?
So an initiation is a better term because it's getting you ready for the big job that you have to do.
Yeah.
So in that way, it makes it a little easier to forgive because they were teaching you a very valuable lesson, even though it was very difficult and hard. You can use it now. The ones who don't use it, ones that are... they're not using what they could, but they're
well,
knowledge.
Well, in time, that's just where in time, hopefully they get it, but that's why they presented it to themselves, so they can
learn from it. They look at it that way.
Right.
Well, Victoria, we're coming up to the top of the hour. The hour has gone very fast.
Oh, wow.
Let's tell people, if they want to contact you, how do you want them to do it?
Well, email is always the best way to contact me. And my email, I'd be happy to give my email address, if that's okay. And I also have a website. They can contact me through the website as well.
Give all that.
The website is, it's HTTP, and then the slash and the colon stuff. And then it's site, S-I-T-E dot heaven is in your heart dot com.
Very nice.
Okay,
and my email address is victoria@heavenisinyourheart.com.
Okay.
All right,
pretty
a little
simple,
easier. And the name of the book is Sleep Magic, and it's Victoria Pendragon. And you can see she's written from experience, and she's found a way to help many people this way. And it sounds very simple when you look at it while you're sleeping at night. So it's a good book, I think, for people out there who have problems.
Oh, absolutely. This is wonderful. Mm-hmm.
So Victoria will be speaking at our 7th Transformation Conference in Rogers, Arkansas on July
13th to the 15th.
Okay, so if any want any information about how to sign up for the conference, it's on our website, Ozark Mountain, which is abbreviated, OZARKMT.com. And we're really hoping everyone will come. This is going to be, every year it's a good one, mm-hmm. and it seems
yeah.
like mm-hmm. every year we outdo
yeah,
ourselves.
They get better and better.
But Victoria, I thank you for coming on tonight. I think this has been a very valuable message.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Dolores. I so much appreciate it.
Okay, and we'll be seeing you before long.
I can't wait.
Okay, well, then, thanks, everyone, for tuning in tonight. And good night, everyone.